All right, we're going to start here on the bottom of Chof Ted Amud Bet, 5 lines from the bottom by the 2 dots. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Koshu liftan, kedei le'echol bo. Koshenu liftan, kedei le'echol menu. So anything that is an accompaniment to the pot, to the bread of the meal, that is not a main course, but rather secondary, or comes to accompany, there you only have to have the amount that you would use to accompany. You don't need the full shiur. On the other hand, if it's a primary item, or it's something that's not malafet the pot, then you have to have a full shtei sudot from that item. Okay, basar chai, kedoy lechol me'emenu. So raw meat is not something that you use to accompany. It's either a main meal or a main item, and therefore you would require the full shtei sudot from it. The raw meat that we're speaking about here is obviously something that is edible, like a carpaccio or a place where they would eat raw meat, or we're talking about something where it's a salted meat. That meat, like a beef jerky, is edible even in the raw form. Basar tzli, roasted meat, rabba amar kedoy lechol bo, you need the amount that would be an accompaniment. You don't eat the roasted meat alone. You eat it as an accompaniment, and therefore you would require the amount that would accompany. Rav Yosef Mark, Rav Yosef says you have to have a full shtei seudot from the basar tzli. So I'm Rav Yosef, and I'm Minala. I can prove that to you, that it is a main course, or it's a primary part of the meal, not something that is secondary or coming to accompany the pot. Dani parsai, achle tavhake below nema. They eat roasted meats without any bread. They eat it as the primary course or the main part of the meal. So Amar Lei Abaye, Abaye was a Talmid of Rav Yosef, says back to him, Uparsai have a ruba d'alma. Okay, so the Persians do this strange thing, but why should they dictate the halacha? They're not the rova olam. V'atnan. And we have a Mishnah, Bigdei aniim li'aniim, Bigdei ashirim li'ashirim. This comes by Tuma. By Tuma, what is the minimum shi'ur of a beged that would be tamei? Well, it depends. If a person is poor, then the minimum size is shalosh al shalosh, which means 3 by 3 etzbaot. Ashirim, someone who is of better economic means, the smallest item is shlosha al shlosha, 3 by 3 tvachim. The difference being that an ani would save a 3 by 3 etzbaot piece of cloth because he would use it as a patch. He would use it to mend the clothing. And a shear wouldn't do that because it wouldn't look right. And the clothing wouldn't look proper. Therefore, in a shear, they need to have something that by itself is valuable or useful, which is 3 by 3 tfachim. But you see, bigdei aniim le'aniim and bigdei ashirim le'ashirim. Aval, bigdei ashirim le'aniim lo. We don't say just because the wealthy people only would use 3 by 3 tfachim that dictates what happens to the aniim. But we go by each individual gets their own category. So it's over here. The Persians, fine, let them have their own category, but that shouldn't impact us. So what do you want to suggest? That in each case, we're going to go to the Chumrah. By the case of the Ani, leaving the Ani independent of the Ashir actually brings such stringency about, because for the Ani, it's going to be 3 by 3 at both, which is a smaller shiur of what can become Tameh. So that's a stringency. So over there we say, yeah, leave the aniyim to be by themselves. They don't have to wait for 3 by 3 tfachim. They can use 3 by 3 etzbot. Over here, the stringency would have the demands of the Persians, which means that you would have to have a full shtei sudot worth of tzli. So let us say you're right. These aren't consistent piskei halacha, but just in each case, we're saying go to the stringency. Take the more stringent side, and we'll pass on the halacha that way. V'atanya, is that really true by Eruv that we worry about the stringency? Because you have Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, me'arvin lechole ulezakein kedei mizono. Someone who is sick, someone who is older, who eats less for their shtei seudot, you only have to provide for their eruv the amount of shtei seudot that they would eat. That's below the standard of shtei seudot. Ularavatan, someone who is a big eater, besuda benonit shel kol adam, we suffice at the normal shtei seudot. So basically it's that or lower. Shtei seudot is the maximum amount that you would put out. If someone would eat less for their shtei seudot, then we reduce the shiur. That's all the kula. That's all to the lenient side. So how could you say here that the whole reason that by the Persians we would say that dictates for everyone is because we want to go to Chumrah? We see by Eruv that we don't do that. We go to the kula. We go to the lenient side and we say that the maximum you need is shtei seudot, and if someone eats less than that, then that would be the shiur for them. Mar says kasha. That is a strong question, and leaves it. Now the Gemara comes and discusses Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar himself. Umi amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar hachi. Does Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar really say this? V'atanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, Og melech Bashan, Pitcho kimlo o. That when it comes to Malchus Shebashan, his opening is for his entirety. Here we're discussing an issue in Tumah, that when there is a mate inside the house, you have to remove the mate from the house. Until you remove the mate from the house, we don't know which doorway or opening window the mate is going to leave or exit the house from. Because of that, the assumption is that all of those openings are tmeim. The openings themselves, the frames or the thresholds of those doorways or windows are all tmei inside of those areas. Once you've decided which one you exit from, that one is tmei, the remainder are tahor, since you took the mate out that way. So here you have Og Melech HaBashan, and he's saying, Og Melech HaBashan being someone very large, to get him out of the doorway, they need a much larger opening. And that's what it says over here, Pitcho Kim Lo O, that you need a full-size doorway in order to allow him to leave. Now, you would have thought, a way Rabbi Shimon Elazar just learned, which is that you would have a maximum size, which would be a standard doorway, and then, if you were smaller than that, you could go below the maximum size. Over here, Rabbi Shimon Elazar seems to have no maximum number. Even up to someone who's Og Melech HaBashan, you have to have an opening his size in order to make that the doorway that you're going to exit from. So you see no cap. There's no limit. How come? Rabbi Shimon Elazar by Eruv says, Shtei Seudot, for a normal person, that's the cap. Over here, why don't we say a normal doorway is the largest size you need to determine that that would be the way they would exit? And then everything else would be tahor. So Mar says, wait a minute. What do you want them to do over here? Hadumei nehebde v'nafke? You want them to chop him up? You want them to quarter him and then take him out? By the choice of taking the mate out, you don't have a choice. By suda, you could say, okay, there's a standard suda, and that'll govern the shtei sudot for a roof. But over here, if you say, oh, we're going to go with the standard doorway, what are you going to do when you need to take him out? A standard doorway is not going to suffice to get him out of here. The only way to get him out, if you have a standard doorway, is to cut him up. And obviously, that's not a solution in this case. That's what Rabbi Shimon Elazar says. Cut the door bigger. That's why he says over there, there's no limit. You can't say that, oh, if you have a normal standard door, then that's already defined as the doorway that you're going to exit from. Because you need a bigger doorway. You're not going to get him out unless you have a bigger doorway. Therefore, pitcho kim lo'o in that case. Do the Rabbanan disagree with the Shimon Elazar's position? Tashma, Dama Rabbi Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan, Og Melech HaBashan, Pitcho Ba'arba'ah. The opening is 4 tvachim. So here you go to a standard doorway, or the minimum size of a doorway, which is 4 tvachim wide, 10 tvachim high. We saw that earlier in the Masechta with regards to the doorway that was curved on the top, or archway on the top. The standard doorway was 4 tvachim wide, 10 tvachim high. And here you have the Rabbanan saying that what's considered to be the petach that Og Melech HaBashan would go out from is 4 tefachim wide. That's certainly not going to allow him out. That's not going to get him out of the house. Nevertheless, they say that's the designated doorway for his exit. So it sounds like they do argue on him. Where it says, Hotam deikab tefachim ktanim tuva. The remainder of the egresses from the house are smaller. V'ikachad dahave arba'a. And then you have one doorway that's 4 tefachim wide. The vadai, ki mirvach, bahu ka mirvach. What your choice now is, you have to widen one of the doorways to get him out. So you have a lot of small exits or egresses from the house, and you have one that's the biggest, which is 4 tefachim wide. If you're going to expand the doorway, which one are you going to pick to expand? You want to pick the one that's already the widest, or already the biggest. I don't know what happened. They got him in. Theoretical question, right? So in that case, the widest doorway is the one that you're going to expand. Because that's already done. More of the work's been done for you in that case. That will become the designated doorway, not because it's met the minimum standard of 4 tefachim, but because, by default, we assume that's the doorway that you're going to expand in order to allow him out. So at first we thought they disagreed with Rabbi Shimon Elazar and said a standard doorway is what determines. But they said, no, that the circumstances here lead you to believe that this will be the doorway they pick, because it's just the widest doorway there, and they're going to expand it. But they do agree with Shimon Elazar that it's not called a doorway till you expand it. Okay, Amar Rabbi Chia bar Rav Ashi, Amar Rav, me'arvim bebasar chai. You can use raw meat for the eruv. Amar Rav Simi bar Chia, me'arvim bebeitzim chayot. You can use raw eggs. Vikama, how many raw eggs do you need for the eruv? Amar Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak, Sinai amar shtaim. Sinai says 2. Sinai is a reference to a gemara at the end of Masechet Brachot, and the last Daf from Masechet Brachot. The Gemara there has a question that is sent, asking, Ezuhein Adif, which is better, Sinai or Oker Harim? Sinai, being someone who has all the information, they have all the Torah in their hands. Oker Harim is someone who is able to answer questions, do pilpul, work with the material, but he doesn't have the breadth or scope of material. Gemara there says that Rav Yosef was Sinai, and Rabbo was Oker Harim. And the Gemara sends back that Sinai is Adif, Kol Tzuchim Demarei Chitayo. Sinai is greater because everybody needs the silo of wheat. I mean, without the basic materials, it doesn't matter how analytical, depth of understanding, the ability to pilpul you have if you don't have the underlying materials. And therefore, Rav Yosef should have been the Rosh Yeshiva. The Gemara there says that Rav Yosef deferred to Rabbah and allowed Rabbah to be the Rosh Yeshiva. And Gemara brings that as an example of person, anybody who allows time to be dochekoto, allows time to push him off, then who dochekot hasha'ah? Rav Yosef was supposed to pass away 2.5 years after becoming Rosh Yeshiva. Because he let Rabbah become the Rosh Yeshiva, he lived for an additional 22.5 years. 20 years that Rabbah is the Rosh Yeshiva, and then the 2.5 that he is Rosh Yeshiva. But there, Rav Yosef is referred to as Sinai, and that's what the reference to here is. Sinai Amashtaim is Rav Yosef Amashtaim. Rav Yosef is the one who said too. Okay, now we move back to our Mishnah, which said, Anoder min amazon, mutar b'mayim b'melach. Someone who takes a neder not to partake of mazon, then he can still have water and salt. Melach, umayim d'lo ikre mazon. Water and salt are not called mazon. Hakol mili ikre mazon. Everything else is called mazon. Let me tabi to yufto de Ravu Shmuel. It should be an undermining question on the position of Rav and Shmuel. The Rav and Shmuel, the Amrei Tarvayu, Ein mevarchim borei minei mizonot, ela chameshet haminim bilvat. Bracha borei minei mizonot, only is said on the 5 grains. So if you have the 5 grains of being mazonot, then if he's no der mina mazon, mazon should only include the 5 grains. It should not have a broader scope. Yet, based on our Mishnah, mazon has a broad scope that includes everything except water and salt, which would indicate you should make borei minei mizonot on any food item that is not water and salt. Where it says, v'lo etzvina echad azimna, didn't you already ask this type of question on them? So what do you need to ask another question like this? The Gemara there in Brachot, in Ketzad Mevarchim, brings the question from the Mishnah in Nidarim, which has the same formulation, which is, anoder min amazon. Someone who's noder min amazon, and there it seems that mazon is a broader scope than simply the 5 deganim, and they question Rav and Shmuel there based on that. So now you're bringing the same question just from another Mishnah. So the guy says, okay, you're right. It'll be another question on that. Right. It strengthens the problem by bringing another Mishnah that says the same thing. Sam Ravuna. So here the Gemara gives the same answer, or a similar answer that it gave in the Gemara Brachot, which is, Bomer kolazan alai. Not that they didn't use the word mazon, but rather zan. Zan means to nourish, whereas mazon is something that nourishes and satisfies. So mazon is only the chameshet minei dagan because it's something that you're koveya su'uda on. You're koveya su'uda because not only does it nourish, but it satisfies. So you're going to pick something to eat that would satisfy you in order to make your su'uda. On the other hand, kolazan means anything nourishes, means any food that you would ingest that you normally would eat. So then in the instance when you say kolazan alai, then maimu melachu dolo zayne. Those aren't things that nourish. So therefore, they're excluded from kolazan. Ha komile zayne. So you're suggesting now that everything or all items are zayne, nourish. Fa'ama rabba barchana, kevazilna batrei de Rabbi Yochanan, the mechel pere de ginosar. When I was going after Rabbi Yochanan to go eat the fruits of ginosar, Ginosar is the area or the plains around the Kinneret. It's a very fertile ground. Till today, it's still a very fertile area. So the fruits that grew there were exceptional. Exceptional in quality and sweetness. So they used to go to travel there in order to gain those fruits, to enjoy those fruits. Kiavina and Bemeya, if there were 100 of us, each one of us would pick 10. If there were 10 of us, then each one of us would pick 100. And each 100 of them would fill up a basket, a barrel that held 3 sa'ah. Rabbi Yochanan would consume all of them. And he would say, I just didn't have anything that was nourishing over here. So that would indicate that even these fruits or these items were not nourishing. They were not zan. Here he says, he takes a shua that he was not nourished from these items. Mara says, no. Over there it says, hey, ema mizona. It shouldn't say ziyuna, but mizona, meaning that they did nourish, but they were not nourishing and satisfying. When he finished, he said, I'm not satisfied. I could eat more. So therefore, when you use the term mazon, mazon means nourish and satisfy. And that has a very specific definition. And that's why Rav and Shmuel say, borei minei mizonot, is only said over the chameshet minei dagan. On the other hand, to say zan, to nourish, that's all basic food items are nourishing, except for mayim and melach, which aren't. These are two ways to formulate the isur. One is a shvua, which I will not eat this kikar. The shvua is focused on the action of eating. In general, that's the way a shvua works. The shvua is not on a particular item, it's on a particular behavior. So here you take a shvua that I will not eat this loaf of bread. The other possibility is a neder. A neder is something that's focused on the chayfets and not on the gavra, on the individual. So over here it says, kikar zu alai. This kikar, this particular loaf of bread is asur to me. So the shvua is focused on the action of eating. The neder is focused on the loaf of bread and making the loaf of bread asur to you. So now, Ravuna Marav says, if you do it in the formula as a shvua shalo achel kikar zu, ma'arvim loba, then you can use it as an eruv. Kikar zu alai, ein ma'arvin loba. If you use it or formulate it as a neder, then you cannot be ma'arev with it. Now Gemara is going to challenge us in 1 second. The difficulty with the way the Gemara sets it up now is, it really doesn't matter whether it's a shvua or a neder, which is it seems to be, based on Ravuna Marav, seems to be the difference between a shvua and a neder. But the truth is that the difference here has to do with what you're making a sur, rather than whether you use the shvua or neder. And we'll see later on, Rashi himself says that, oh, you could have just formulated it this way and you would end up with the same result. I'll point it out later. But the Gemara here is focused on you're getting benefit from this loaf of bread. Putting the eruv out, it allows you to get benefit from this loaf of bread. Now, what type of benefit is that? If you tell me that the benefit is that you have to eat the eruv, then fine. It shouldn't matter whether it's a shvua or a neder here. None of this should matter. Why is there any differentiation at all? But we know from our mission already that that's not the case. You do not have to be able to eat your eruv. If someone else can eat the eruv, and it's ra'oi for them, that's good enough. So what ends up happening here is that you are deriving benefit from this loaf of bread, but not benefit of eating it, but a indirect tana, which is that someone else could eat it, and that would provide you the benefit of setting up your eruv. So now, is that precluded by the statement? Well, that depends on what your statement is. If you say that my shvua is not to eat the item, then the only thing that you restricted was eating. But side benefits, or hana, that would come from someone else being able to eat it, giving you the eruv, that was not restricted. And that's why when you say shvua, shalo achel kikar zu, ma'arvim lo ba, then you can make an eruv. On the other hand, when you say kikar zu alai, ein ma'arvim lo, when you restrict the kikar, you don't define what the restriction is. You simply say that this kikar is asur. Now, if you make this kikar asur, then it seems to be that it's a broader scope of isur, not just eating it. It means any hana, any benefit from this is restricted. Now, if that is the case, then you could not use it as an eruv because, fine, you can't eat it. Someone else will eat it, but then you're deriving benefit from the fact that someone else is eating it because that makes it your eruv. And that's the difference between the first statement and the second statement as to why Rav said in Shvua, Shalo Ochel Kikar, you can do an eruv. Kikar zualai, ein meruvim bo. So now the Gemara brings Meitavei. Hanoder mina kikar, ma'arvin lo ba. If you take a neder from a kikar, you can use it for an eruv. That would seem to be against the position of Rav. So my love, domar alai. So how did he formulate the neder? Sounds like he formulated the neder that kikar zu alai, which would be against Rav's position. The Gemara says lo, domar zu. Now, he formulated it as a shvu'a, the way Rashi reads it. Shvu'a shlo ochel kikar zu. So when it says, achanami mistavro, that makes sense. Diktani seifa. The latter half of the brayta that we're quoting says, Ematai, Bizman Shamar Shvua Shalo et Amena. When he said it in a formula this way, that it's a shvua that I will not taste it. Aval Amar a lie, but if he said a lie, my, what would be the din? Hachanami Dein Maruimba. So then we would say, right, like Rav, that you can't use it for an Eruv. Where it says, Ihochi, if that's the case, if what you're saying is correct, Adatani Kikar Zuek Desh in Marvin Loba, later on in that Braita, it says, when can you not use it when it comes to a nether? If this Kikar Zuek Desh, if this Kikar is made into Hekdesh, then you can't make an Eruv because Hekdesh is restricted to everyone. Hekdesh is not limited to him. The restriction of Hekdesh applies to everyone. If it applies to everyone, then no one can eat this loaf of bread. If no one can eat this loaf of bread, you can't make it into an Eruv. Well, according to Rav, if that was the case, why is that the example brought in the Braita, something that is restricted, because you can't make an Eruv with something that is Hekdesh? Liflo belitna bidida. According to Rav, you could have made the differentiation even within Chulin. That's only he formulated it as a Shvua. Avar amar alai ein marvin lo ba. But if he had said it as kikar zu alai, then you couldn't have used it as an eruv. Why did the Braita skip over that possibility? The Braita is giving you an example of something you can use as an eruv. Then it gives you an example of something that you cannot use as an eruv. The example it gives that you can use as an eruv is the case of shua shalo et amena. Then, what's the example of something that you may not use as an Eruv? Kikar Zuek Desh. What happened to that middle case, where if you said Kikar Zu Alai, that would have been also a case where you couldn't use it as an Eruv. And that would have been a finer distinction that you could have put in the Braita if it was true. Assuming that it was true, then the Braita should have distinguished within Chulin and said, when is it permitted to use an Eruv? Shvur Shalom Et Amena. When is it impermissible to use it as an Eruv? Kikar Zu Alai. The fact that it skipped over that and went to Hekdesh implies that it's not what it's thinking. So what does that mean? Amar lecha Ravuna elamai. So what do you want to suggest here? Kohecha damar alai ma'arvin. So if you want to say that if you put kikar zu alai, then it is permitted to use it as an eruv, then kashereisha. Then you have a problem the other way, which is, well, if kikar zu alai allows you to use it as an eruv, then why was the example that the Braita brought where you're allowed to use it is shvua shalo et amena? You could have said, you could have listed other items that would have been permissible. Why don't we skip that case? So in either instance, you're going to run into a problem, because the Braita just did not address Kikar Zu'alai. So for Rav, it's a problem, because why didn't it use that as the Tzad Isur? For those that disagree with Rav, then why didn't it use it as the Tzad Heter? So Mar says, as far as the Braita is concerned, we can answer that question, which is, Hasurei Mechsera. It's missing some words in it. This is what it said. Anoder mina kikar mi'arvim lo ba. If you take a nether, kikar zu alai, you can make an eruv with it. Va'afilu amar alai. Even if you formulate it in the way that's kikar zu alai, nase ke omer shvua shalo et amena. It's the equivalent of saying shvua shalo et amena. So that's all included in the first part of the Braita, which is it's mutar. So then, mikom akom kashal ravuna. So nevertheless, that is a problem for ravuna. So Shul is asking, what is the reason behind the position that says kikar zu alai? What's the reason that you're allowed to use it as an eruv? So there are two possibilities of why you could use it as an eruv. One we're going to discuss in a second. The other one is what you mentioned, which is that when you say kikar zu alai, the primary hana'a that a person gets from an item, like bread, is eating. So therefore, when a person says kikar zu alai, the assumption is that he restricted eating it. And that's what he meant. And therefore, this ancillary hana'ah is not a problem. That's one way to formulate it. The other way to formulate it, we'll see in a second, is that the reason you're allowed to make an eruv is for dvar mitzvah. That later on in the Masechta, they're going to see that the primary purpose of an eruv is for dvar mitzvah, and that's the only time you're allowed to put out an eruv tchumim. We have a principle in mitzvot, mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu. And when you do a mitzvah, you don't get benefit. Even though there might be benefit from the mitzvah, nevertheless, that's not a benefit that's classified as a benefit that we worry about. For instance, if a person takes a neder shvua by shofar, says that I don't want to hear the shofar, or I don't want to hear this person blow the shofar, nevertheless, he can hear the shofar be blown as the mitzvah shofar in Rosh Hashanah, because mitzvot lav v'henot nitnu. The hanah that you get from doing a mitzvah is not considered to be, quote-unquote, physical hanah. And therefore, it's not governed by the neder or shvuah that you took. There is a machloket rishonim, we'll get to in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, how far do we take that? So for instance, if a person goes into a mikveh on a hot day, and it's cold water, and he took a neder or a shvuah against that, do we say mitzvah lav le'enot? No. Here, it's obvious that he's getting benefit from it. Yes, he's going to the mikveh, but it's also obvious that he's getting a physical benefit from it. Over there, the Rishonim argue about whether that really is still classified as mitzvah lav le'enot. So fine, he goes in, he gets benefit, but it's not real benefit. Or do we say there you can separate between the physical benefit of the cold water and cooling off and the mitzvah being accomplished? So that's a further question. But over here, you could suggest one of those two reasons as to why someone would believe that if you took a neder, it would still be okay to use this. So Umar says, Kasha the Rav Huna, who quoted Rav, Hu damak Rabbi Eliezer. He subscribes to the position, Rabbi Eliezer. The Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shua shalo achel kikar zu, marvim lo ba. Kikar zu alai, ein marvim lo ba. So here you have a Tano who says the same thing that Rav says. So he has support in a Tanaic work. We don't have to worry about the bright anymore because Rabbi Eliezer is the position that he subscribed to. Someone argues on Rabbi Eliezer. You have Tanaim that argue. That's fine. As long as Rav Huna Marav has a Tana that supports their position. So now, Vahatanyo Zeaklau. Don't we have a brayta that says this is the principle? Adam oser atzmo beochel marvin lo ba. Ochel hana aser lo the Adam ein marvin lo ba. So if the person himself is oser himself in the ochel, then you can use it as an eruv. Meaning basically, if it's formulated as a shvu'ah, or it focuses on the achila aspect, then you can use it for an eruv. Chel ner aser lo the Adam, if the object is asur, then ein marvin lo ba, which is basically the difference that we saw before between shvu'ah and neder. But then Rabbi Eliezer Omer, kikar zu alai marvin lo ba. Oh, now Rabbi Eliezer says, if you say it as a neder, kikar zu alai, you're allowed to use it for an eruv. That's the exact opposite of what we just saw from Rabbi Eliezer before. So kikar zu ekdesh, ein marvin lo ba. If he says it's ekdesh, then certainly he can't use it because ekdesh is not mutar to anybody. Fish ain the marvin lo ba ekdesh shod, because you can't use ekdesh. Where it says, obviously this is trait tanai, aliba the Rabbi Eliezer. It's clear here that you have Rabbi Eliezer saying two opposite things. They're mutually exclusive. And so you must have two Tanaim quoting what Rabbi Eliezer's opinion was. In one case, they quote Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that is consistent with the position of Rabbi Huna Marav. In another case, we have them quoting the position of Rabbi Eliezer that is against that position of Rabbi Huna Marav. And Rabbi Huna is going to tell you that I subscribe to that Rabbi Eliezer that has the position that is consistent with what I said in the name of Rav, which is that when you formulate it with regards to achila, it's mutar to use. If the isur is a general isur, a generic isur, on the loaf, then you may not use it as an eruv. As Rashi points out over here, ochal anaser al adam. What does it mean to ochal is anaser al adam? Kagon, kikarzu te asar alai. Oh, shvash bohenem ikarzu. So Rashi shows you the difference here is not about a shvua and a neder. It doesn't have to do with shvua and neder, but rather how you formulate it. If you take a shvua, I'm not going to get benefit from it. You're in the same place as taking the neder. Because shvua shalo ehenem means I'll get no benefit. No benefit, then you can't use it for an eruv. If you say shvua shalo ochel, I will not eat it, then you can use it as an eruv. Fine, you can't eat it, but you can get benefit from it, which is all you need in order to have it be an eruv. But the neder, kikazu te asar alai, so there, when you make the kikar asur, according to the way Rav Huna Marav assumes, is that when you say kikar zu alai, means you're not going to get hanaf from this loaf of bread, and that precludes you from using it as an eruv. But Rashi just showed you is that it's not important that it's a shvua or a neder. It's important how it's formulated or what you have restricted. And that's why Tosafot asks, which I pointed out before, why the Gemara started out, or Rav Huna Marav's statement really looks like it's a difference between shvua and neder, rather than simply a difference between which, if is it Isur Achila or Isur Hana'ah, which seems to be the basic difference that we are discussing over here. Tosafot tries to answer it. He uses a Rashbam to try to answer it. And then the end, he backs away from it and says, I really can't explain it that way. And the end says, maybe you could have answered, you could have said it this way, but they formulated it that way. He doesn't really have a strong answer for why the Gemara formulated as a Shvua and a Neder, rather than focusing on what's really important here, which is Achila and Hana'ah. All right, now, moving on in the Gemara, we go on to the next piece of the Mishnah, which is Ma'arvin l'Nazir B'Yayin. You can make an Eruv for a Nazir B'Yayin. Matznitan d'loka Beit Shammai. Our Mishnah does not follow the position of Beit Shammai. The Tanya of Abraita, Beit Shammai Omrim, Eim Arvim l'Nazir B'Yayin ul Yisrael B'Truma. Beit Shammai says you can't use wine for a Nazir and Truma for Yisrael, which is the exact opposite of what our Mishnah says. Beit Hillel Omrim, Beit Hillel says, Ma'arvim l'Nazir B'Yayin ul Yisrael B'Truma. Beit Hillel says what's found in our Mishnah. So Amru lahen Beit Hillel to Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel says to Beit Shammai, Iyatem mudim, don't you admit Shem'arvim the gadol b'yom ha'kippurim? Can you make an Eruv for Yom Kippur? How do you make an Eruv for Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur, you want to walk past the limitation of 2,000 amot, so you want to put an Eruv in that specific location. You put it down, you put a meal there. Can you eat the meal on Yom Kippur? The answer is no. Despite the fact that you can't eat the meal, you're able to put out an Eruv. Why is that? The assumption being, because even though a gadol can eat it, a katan could eat it. Someone who was a minor, who was not a baronshin, not chayav in inui, could eat this meal. And because of that, it'll be good enough for the gadol. So don't you agree, shemarvim the gadol biyom kippurim? Amrulahan, aval. Aval means be'emet. It's the same way it's used in Torah by Parshat Vayera. It means aval means truthfully. Amrulahan, kishem shemarvim the gadol biyom kippurim. This is Beit Hillel addressing Beit Shammai. The same way that you can make an eruv for a gadol and Yom Kippur, kein marvim lenazir b'yayin yisrael b'tshuma. Meaning that it's the same concept. If you don't have to be able to consume it. Someone has to be able to consume it, and so that's fine in each of these cases. B'tshamai hatam ikasuda haruya b'vod yom hachalecha suda haruya b'vod yom. B'tshamai makes a distinction and says, you're right. By Yom Kippurim, on Yom Kippur, you cannot eat this meal. But as you entered Yom HaKippurim, the meal was totally permissible to you. The only thing that stops you from eating the meal is Yom Kippur. Without Yom Kippur, this meal would have been a good meal for you. That's why it works as an Eruv. Over here, before Shabbat, could you drink the wine? The answer is no. You were a Nazir before Shabbat. You're a Nazir on Shabbat. You couldn't have had the wine in either case. No matter whether it was before Shabbat or after Shabbat. So you don't have a Suda Ruya. Same thing with Truma. The Israel couldn't have consumed the Truma, not before Shabbat, not after Shabbat. So you don't have a Suda Ruya, you're right. By Yom Kippur, you can't make the Eruv, but that's only because the Suda was good until Yom Kippur came in. But the Eruv is Kone Ben HaShemashot, and when Yom Kippur comes in, okay, fine. But it was a meal that you could have eaten. So that's the distinction that they make. I don't think he literally means, I mean, either way, Tchilat Tayom is Kone. It's not really Ben HaShemashot, that's Kone, it's Tchilat Tayom, that's Kone. So Beit Shammai agrees that when the Kinyan happens, you can't eat it. But you have a meal that was possibly good for you to eat. So therefore, it works on Yom Kippur. But if you've never had the possibility of eating such a meal, then it can't work. That's what I have to formulate in Beit Shammai. The Gemara says, Kaman, who is this position of Beit Shammai like? Doloki Chananyo. It's against Chananyo's explanation of Beit Shammai's position. The Tanya, Chananyo Omer, Kol Atzman Shel Beit Shammai Lo Ayu Modim Be'eruv. Beit Shammai doesn't hold of Eruv Tchumim the way that we've been discussing until now. The way we've discussed Eruv Tchumim until this point is, you just have to put out a meal there, stay sealed out, and that functions as your new house. That's your new location, and that's what makes it into Eruv Tchumim. Chananya says that's not the opinion of Beit Shammai. You know what Beit Shammai thinks an Eruv is? Ad yotzi mitato, v'chol kli tashmishav, l'sham. You want to make your new house? Move. That's right, you got to move your house over there. Take your bed, take all the things that you need, your alarm clock, all that stuff, your clothes. You move over there, now you have a new place. You don't do that, you don't have a new location. So, come on, Azla, the Tanya, who does this brayta follow? Yirev b'shkorim. He went out and made an eruv wearing black clothing. Lo yitzei b'levanim. Then he can't later on use white clothing. B'levanim, if he made the eruv while he was wearing white clothing, lo yitzei b'shkorim. Can't go out with black clothing. Come on. Amar Rav Nachman b'yitzcha Chananya yi. Valib b'Beit Shammai. This has got to be Chananya going to Beit Shammai. Because, according to Chananya, that would not work as an eruv. Gemara says, wait a minute, if it doesn't work as a roof, ulechananya b'shchorim hu dolo yitzei, habalavanim yitzei, if he went out there and took that place and wore white clothing at the time, comes back home, changes into black clothing, we say he can't do it. But if he kept the white clothing on, it would have worked. According to Chananya, that's not enough to make an A-roof. In order to have an A-roof, you've got to move to that new location. So that certainly can't be the position of Chananya. So whose position is this? Amar actually see me to talk late as mishav the sham until you move there. Tachik Amar, Yirev b'levanim. If he made a roof with white clothing on, butzrach l'shchorim, and then he wants to put on black clothing, af b'levanim lo yitzei. He can't even go out with his white clothing because he didn't make an eruv according to this. Come on, that's Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Chananya yivalib de Beit Shammai. That's Chananya according to Beit Shammai. By simply being there and wearing clothing out there, that does not make it into an eruv. Eruv Tchumim means you gotta move your physical home to there, you gotta move some significant items there in order for it to be an Eruv. And therefore, if you didn't do that, you don't have an Eruv, and the person can't go, can't walk with his clothing. I mean, he can't walk with anything, he can't go to that location. Alright, next line in the Mishnah is Sumchus Omer Bechulin. Sumchus disagrees and says you may not use Truma for Israel, you can only use Chulin. When we read the Mishnah, I noted that Sumchus only argued on the Truma aspect. But Nazir B'Yayin, he did not disagree. He didn't say anything about Nazir B'Yayin. Why not? It's the same problem. But Nazir can't drink the wine. It's the same as the Israel that can't eat the Truma. When it says, V'ilo Nazir B'Yayin lo polig, my time. What's the reason that he differentiates? Efshar de Mitchell at Nizirute. Because there's a possibility that a person can get Hatarat Nidarim for his Neder Nizirut. So if he does Hatarat Nidarim, he's no longer a Nazir, and therefore he could drink the wine. So if you did your Heter Nidarim, Benesh Mashal, there would be a possibility of you drinking wine. That's enough to make an internet route for you. So Gemara says, Yihachi Truma Anami. What about Truma? Efshar de Mitchell Iluye. You could do the same thing by Truma. Truma is a form of Neder. It's designating one part as Truma and the remainder as Hulin. It's the equivalent of taking Neder Hekdeshot, making something Mukdash. You're designating it as Truma. You could get Hatarat Nidarim to take care of this Truma or unwind the Truma that you made. Where it says, well, great. What happens when you undo the Truma that you made? What are you left with? Imichlala Hadra Lativla. It goes back to being Tevel. What's the state before Truma is Tevel, which is something that you can't eat either. I mean that by Yayin, before you were a Nazir, you could drink the wine. After you're a Nazir, you can't drink the wine. If you're Matir Nether, now you could drink the wine. Truma can't eat it because you're Yisrael. You're Mashul on your Nether, you take a Hadarat Nidarim, you undid the Truma, now you're left with Tevel. You can't eat Tevel either. You haven't done anything to benefit yourself. Gemara says, "Lifrosh alam mimakom acher." Okay, so he'll be Machrish, Truma to Mashrut on this item from somewhere else, from another location on this, and that'll take care of the problem. It'll be Tevel, but he'll say, look, over there in my house, I have this, that'll be Truma on this. It says, Lo nechshudu chavirim nitrom shalom min hamukaf. There's a requirement by Shumot HaMasrot that you take it off min hamukaf. Min hamukaf means adjacent, something that is present. We take off Shumot HaMasrot in front of you. If you have the item in front of you, you separate the Truma Maser right in front of you. You don't take off Shumot HaMasrot from another location that's not adjacent to the item that you're trying to be mafrish the Shumot HaMasrot from. Now, even though there is a dispensation, which is that for Kavod Shabbat, you're allowed to do it. So here you should have that dispensation of Kavod Shabbat. So Tosfot says, very good. If you want to eat it, that Shabbat. Well, it's only if you want to eat the item that Shabbat, do you have the dispensation. And then it's really Kavod Shabbat. So there we have the dispensation, we'll give up Lomina Mukaf for the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbat. Over here, you don't have to eat the Eruv on Shabbat. You just have to have it there in order to allow you to go further, to use the Eruv Tchumin. So therefore, it's not necessarily about Shabbat. On the other hand, Tosfot says, even though you're only allowed to be ma'arev, we said before, the Dvar Mitzvah. If you're allowed to be ma'arev, the Dvar Mitzvah, now you're back to like square one. You have a mitzvah that you're doing. So do it shlomi nemukaf in order to accomplish the mitzvah. So there, Tosfot says that the dispensation was only for Kavod Shabbat, not for other mitzvot. And that's why over here we say, Shlomi Nakaf, you can't do it. It says, okay, fine. You have the item here, you just made it back into Tevel. Take off Trumot HaMasrot from itself. Say, in the north side, there's Truma. In the south side, there's Maser. You can take off the Trumot HaMasrot from this item itself. It says, oh, that's not working here. Why? It only had Shtei Seudot exactly. That Shtei Seudot exactly as Tevel, when you take off the Trumot and Masrot, you're no longer left with Chulin of Shtei Seudot. That's not going to work. Mercedes, Umay Pasco. Wait a minute. How could you set up the Mishnah this way? The Mishnah doesn't give like a definitive statement. Oh yeah, we're talking about here exactly Shtei Seudot. You're making the Mishnah sound like I was talking about only about Shtei Seudot, so you run into this problem because there's a... Who says it wasn't more than Shtei Seudot? It's not clear from the Mishnah that Sumchus makes a statement only when it's exactly Shtei Seudot. No, it sounds like Sumchus makes a generic, a general statement. So the Sumchus, Savar Laki Rabbanan. Sumchus subscribes to the position of the Rabbanan. Damrei kol davar shu mishum shvut, gazru alav ben hashmashot. Anything that is an Isir de Rabbanan, we are gozer, that gazera applies even ben hashmashot. It's machlok between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Rabbi believes that anything that is a shvut, that's an isur derabanan, ben hashmashot, the isur derabanan does not apply, the gzera does not apply, ben hashmashot. It's a dispensation that will help us later on in Eruvim and other places, that if the only restriction between you and your Eruv is an isur derabanan, that's not a problem for being an Eruv. For instance, it's in a Carmelite, and you're in Rishut Yachid, Rishut Rabim, that's not going to be a problem, because a Carmelite is only a problem derabanan, and your Eruv is kone ben hashmashot. And because of that, the only thing that separates between you and your Eruv is an Isur Rabbanan. So Ben HaShmashot, that's not going to be a problem according to Rabbi. The Chachamim disagree with Rabbi and say, even Ben HaShmashot, there is an Isur Rabbanan. Now what Isur Rabbanan are we talking about here? We're talking about the Isur to be Mafrish, Trumot, and Masrot on Shabbat. One may not remove Trumot and Masrot on Shabbat because it looks like Mitakein, Binyan, it looks like you're fixing something on Shabbat. You're making something edible or usable now that it wasn't before. So therefore, it's restricted on Shabbat. Does that apply, Ben HaShmashot? So according to the Chachamim, the answer is, yes, it does apply Benesh Mashul. Now, if Sumcha subscribes to the Chachamim's position, now we can understand what he's saying. You can do a Hataret Nedarim in order to not be a Nazir anymore, and then the wine would be permissible to you, and then you can have your Eruv from the wine. What are you going to do with the Truma? The Truma, you're going to be Matir Neder on the Truma, and now it turns back into Tevel. So now you have to be Mafrish Trumot Masrot. Mafrish Trumot Masrot is an Isur Drabanan. And he holds like the Chachamim that Isurei Drabanan apply Benesh Mashot. You can't fix the problem. Even if you've got that Taret Nedarim done Benesh Mashot, you can't fix the problem once you get back to Tevel, because you can't be Mafrish Trumot Masrot Benesh Mashot. So you're still stuck in the same place according to Sumchus. The question you should ask is, great, Hataret Nedarim is also Asur on Shabbat. One may not be Matir Neder on Shabbat, so that's also an Isur Darabanan. So if that's an Isur Darabanan, how are you being Mashal your Neder? How are you being Matir Neder? Benesh Mashot for the Nazir, for the Yayin, or even here, when you want to do it for the Truma. So that's what answers that there is a dispensation by being Matir Neder if it's Lutzarach HaShabbat. Sometimes Lutzarach Shabbat, then we allow you to be Matir Neder. And of course here it is Lutzarach HaShabbat, because this is what allowing you the Tchum to move on Shabbat. So since it is a Tzarach HaShabbat, then we allow you to be Matir Neder ben HaShmashot, even though we subscribe to the position of the Chachamim that Isurei Darabanan apply ben HaShmashot. K'man Asla Haditznan, according to whom does this Mishnah follow? Yesham Ruah Kol Defi Mashahu Adam. Sometimes there are Shiurim that are subjective rather than objective. In general, we assume that all Shiurim min HaTorah that the Chachamim put in place are objective. That's what the Chachamim tried to do, even when sometimes they're right that there's not an objective standard. The Chachamim, in imposing a Gezeirah, generally try to move things to an objective standard. They take away the gray area, and that's the purpose of the Yisrei Chachamim, a lot of times we say the Rabbanan, is so that people don't make a mistake by their assumptions in the gray area. So what we do is make an objective level or an objective standard. So here the Mishnah says there are some things that are subjective rather than objective when it comes to Shiurim. For instance, below Kumtzo. When you take a komets is the requirement of the Kohen when he removes from the mincha and the mikdash. A komets is the equivalent of a fistful or a particular type of fistful that you take in. Obviously, that's going to depend on you as the Kohen. The size of your hand is going to make a difference. So that's a subjective shiur. So that's melokum tzov a mincha. Melokhufnav of a ktoret. Two handfuls of ktoret. That's a ktoret on Yom HaKippurim. The Kohen Gadol takes in melokhufnayim of ktoret. That's also going to make a difference. What's the size of his hands will make a difference as to the size of the ktoret that he's going to take in. A melo lugmav, which is a cheekful. A cheekful also depends on the size of your mouth, the size of your cheek. Melo lugmav, that is what's asur to drink on Yom Kippur, that's also going to be subjective. Ubamazon shteis udot le'eruv. And this two sudot of an eruv is going to depend on the size of the individual, the type of person, how much you eat. So shtei sudot for one person is going to be different than shtei sudot for another person. That says that eruv is subjective rather than objective standard. Come on. Who's that like? Amar Reb Zeira, sumchusi. That is sumchus's position. Tamar, may dechazi le beinon. Sumchus's position in our Mishnah is that you have to be able to eat what's there. May dechazi le. If you make your eruv with Truma, it doesn't work. Because you cannot eat the Truma. A Kohen could eat the Truma, but you couldn't eat the Truma. Since it's something that you could not eat, it's no longer valid as a roof. So if that's the position of Sumchus, Sumchus says everything depends on you. So just like it depends on you, if you can eat this item, then it's an Eruv. If you can't eat it, you can't be an Eruv. So the same thing with terms of size. Well, if he thinks it all has to do with you, then Shtei Sudot can't be an objective standard. It has to be what you would eat for Shtei Sudot, not what the standard size of Shtei Sudot would be. And that's what the Gemara says. Gemara says, Lema pligad Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Now we go back to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar from the beginning of today's daf. Let's say this argues Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the Tanya. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, ma'arvin l'choleh u'zakein k'dei mizono. When it came to a choleh u'zakein, the other gears or other possibility in the Tosefta is istinis v'katan. Either way, it's people who do not consume the normal size meal. And therefore, what do? We drop the standard by those individuals. But Ravatan, when it came to someone who consumed much more food, b'sudah b'ninit shokol adam, said the cap, the limit was no more than the standard average person's two shudot. So see, for Rabbi Shimon Elazar, there is an objective standard of shtei shudot, as opposed to, according to Sumchus, who says that every person determines the shtei shudot for themselves. Right, to the downside, but not to the upside. Meaning that he's mekil, but not machmir. Shaul's question is basically how the Gemara answers it. Shaul says, wait, Rabbi Shimon Lazar is not exactly this objective standard. He says there's a cap, but you can drop down. So the Gemara says, but that's how we'll answer for Sumchus as well, which is Targama Cholev Zakein. That's Rav Sumchus is stand, when Sumchus said this, or when we said that, it's on Chol and Zakein. A Ravatan, but Tayla Datoitzel Kol Adam. Even Sumchus will agree by someone who consumes more that that person's out, he's out in left field, meaning that he is unusual. And since he's unusual, we'll say Tayla Datoitzel Kol Adam. So he will agree with Rav Shimon Elazar in that case, so they don't necessarily have to be arguing. He'll say that it is subjective, but there is a certain point where you're considered to be so far off the line that we go back to the objective standard. And then they could agree, because even Rabbi Shimon Elazar agreed by Chola and Zakein that we dropped the number down, so it is subjective. He only said it's objective when it came to someone who is a large eater or a big eater. So he said objective. We could term it not objective, but simply, this person is so far out that he's betailed that to its old Adam. We don't listen, we don't think about it, we don't concern ourselves with this person anymore. He's outside of the normal distribution, and therefore we bring him back into the normal shtei seudot. If the Eruv is in a Beit HaPras, then the Kohen can use it as his Eruv. Beit HaPras, we discussed before, is a field in which there was a kever that was lost. Someone plowed over the field, and our assumption is that the plow distributed the bones all over this field, and there is a standard size of how far the plow goes, and because of that, then we are afraid there are bones in this field. Now, bones being distributed in the field are not a problem of ohel, because a ohel requires a certain minimum amount of the mate to be together in order to be classified as an ohel. What we're married about is what we call magor heset, coming into contact with a bone. You walk on the field, and then he steps on a bone, or he moves a bone in the field, that's going to make the kohen tameh. So that's what we're worried about in this beta press, and that's why a kohen is not allowed to enter into a beta press. So if his eruv is there, we're still going to allow him to go in there. How? The Gemara says, the Amar of Yehuda Mashmol, min apeach adam bebeta press volech. He can get down his hands and knees and blow. Blows. He moves away the top layer of the dust there, and he can see, is there a bone? There is no bone there. Once he's done that, he can continue to walk. That's one way to get through a beta press. So there is a way for a kohen to get through a beta press. Therefore, if his eruv is there, we don't worry about it. Or, Rabbi Yehuda Barami Mishmei, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Beit HaPras Nidash Tohor. If you have a well-worn path in the Beit HaPras, then the kohen doesn't have to worry anymore. What are you worried about? Again, we're worried about him coming into contact with bone or moving the bone. If you have a well-worn path, then the bone either is moved out of the way because people already walked on there and knocked it out, or it's visible, or it's gone to the point where you can't move it anymore. It's been pressed down, the dirt has been pressed down so hard that even if you step there, you're not going to move the bone because it's a solid path. So therefore, if you have a solid path through there, the kohen can take that path through the Beit HaPras, and we don't worry about him touching the bone. So that's why if you put the Eruv in the Beit HaPras, it's permissible. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Av Beit HaKvarot. Rabbi Yehuda says you can even put the Eruv inside of a cemetery. Now there, it's much more difficult. I mean, the Beit HaPras, we're dealing with the Isur D'Rabbanan, and there are ways to get around it that the kohen can get in there. A cemetery, there's no way around it, because there is not only a problem with Magal Masa, there's a problem of Ohel. No matter how the kohen gets in there, he's going to be Mayo on the mate, and it's going to be problematic. So Tanam Yipnei Sheyachol Achutz Velelech Bishida Teva Umigdal. So because there's a possibility that he can separate between himself and the Beit HaKvarot by going in there in some sort of enclosure. Goes in there with an enclosure, then it'll be okay. Kesavar. Ohel Zaruk Shmei Ohel. This person must believe that an Ohel in motion is considered an Ohel. Because here he has to be in the enclosure before he enters into the Beit HaKvarot, and then we're going to move him through the Beit HaKvarot, and he's going to be an oil zaruk. Uplukta da'ani tonight. This is similar to another machloket tanaim that we have. The Tanya, anichnas eretz amim. One who leaves Eretz Yisrael goes to Chutz La'aretz. Chachamim or gozer in Chutz La'aretz, that the land in Chutz La'aretz is tamei. So now, how can a kohen go out into Chutz La'aretz and not become tamei? B'shida teva'u midah. If he does this, he goes out in an enclosure. Rebbe mitamei. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda mitaher. Rebbe says you're tamei. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says it works in your Torah. But my kamiflige, what are they arguing about? Mar savar ol zaruk lav shmei ohel. One of them holds that an ohel in motion is not considered to be an ohel, and therefore it doesn't protect you. That's what Rabbi says. It doesn't protect you because you're in motion inside of something, and that does kind of protect you. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, ohel zaruk, mar sever ohel zaruk shmei ohel, that it's considered to be an ohel, and it's considered to be an ohel. That will protect you from the tumah, and you won't become tamei in the Beit HaKvarot, you won't become tamei in Eretz HaAmim. So because of that, that would allow you to access to your Eruv.
The Kohen wants to get to his Eruv. He has a way or a methodology for getting to his Eruv, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, or in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda. And that's why the Eruv is permissible for the Kohen, even when it's placed in the Beit HaKvarot. Okay, we'll stop over here.